That orgasmic moment.
The play of the week, probably the century.
Kind of had its cotillion, its coming out party, its quinceañera, as it were.
Don't get bossed around when you're on the black pieces.
What? The mana's awful, and so I need to balance that.
When no one individual card really means anything.
Even the good players in the world have bad weekends.
The decks start to flow for me.
Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to this week's Host Pro Tour episode of Tryhards. Somebody's about to do some bragging. Somebody's getting bad news. And somebody is about to win something big from the newfangled version of the Tryhards Patreon drawing. It's all this week on this episode of Tryhards. Guys, let's get it started like we do each week. Matt, what are you drinking as we roll out?
I have some bourbon in my glass. We didn't cast last night, so I had some delicious Red Lobster and drinks, and I've got more drinks tonight. You guys forced me to drink last night, and you're going to force me to drink tonight again. But I've just got some Old Forester in my glass.
With podcast pals like these, who needs friends? That's long been Matt's position on life. Brian, what are you drinking after we both got the giggles there after the Red Lobster reference from Matt?
I just love the oxymoron of delicious Red Lobster. That was pretty good. I was up in Wisconsin this weekend visiting the new homestead, as it were, and picked up something from the Fox River Brewing Company. It's finally time to put away the IPAs, put away even the not-so-dark Oktoberfest, and go for something a little bit heavier since it has turned chilly. So I have the Marble Eye Scottish Ale from Fox River. Very, very good. Very malty. A little bitter on the back end. I really like this one.
Brian, I never thought you would be someone who would undersell a situation. It was 11 degrees in the second week of November here. It was absolutely brutal when it got that cold, but it did give me one excuse that I am always ready to take, and that's getting into the darker, heavier beers. So I picked up the Snow Intel. This is one of my favorite Scotch ales from Boulevard. They age it in the oak barrels. The Snow Intel in the glass here this evening. Yes, there's snow on the ground here. 11 degrees before Thanksgiving. Snow on the ground in the Midwest before basketball season started. That's never a good sign. I don't know what the Old Farmer's Almanac says about that, but I don't like it. One thing that I do like, talking about the Magic that we played this week. Guys, I had a real busy weekend with a couple of seasons crossing over. And while I didn't get to play any Magic, I have a confession to make. If this were reality TV, I feel like I'd like step into the confessional right now. I have gotten wrapped up in, you're never going to guess this, the World Chess Championship that's going on in London. There is an American challenger, Fabiano Caruana. He is trying to take down Magnus Carlsen. Carlsen's been the world champ for 4 or 5 years now. Caruana, little bit of provincialism here, I must admit. St. Louis Chess Club guy, really kind of came back as a pro after spending time in Europe and has made that sort of his operating base. So it's been interesting to watch. In case you're wondering, they played a 6.5 points. You get 1 point for a win, none for a loss, and a half for a draw. After 4 days of playing, there have been 4 consecutive draws. It's scintillating, I tell you, scintillating stuff to watch. Twitch is wondering how they ever got onto the topic of live games. And if Magic wasn't bad enough, now chess, the scintillating sport of kings. No, not horse racing. That'd be too exciting. Should be interesting to watch this as it goes down to the wire. That was what I did instead of Magic this week. It was just what I had time to do. Although I will tell you, I finally got to have that one moment. I just jumped onto Arena and over the weekend had a few moments to just jam the mono red deck. I had always gotten cut off when I got my experimental frenzy out and it was land. Finally, that orgasmic moment. Just a fountain of damage is just spewing forth from the deck. I think I played 7 cards off the top in a row with Experimental Frenzy and dealt like 17 points of damage out of nowhere. My opponent thought they were safe because they were hiding behind a Lyra Dawnbringer. Not good enough this time as I finally got to have that one moment with Experimental Frenzy. Now I know why people love the deck and I might start playing it. Brian, what Magic did you get to play this week?
Didn't get to play any. Shockingly, I know, shockingly. I was on the road quite a little bit this weekend, 5-hour drive up to Appletown and 5 hours back on Monday. So while the kids were engrossed in their little electronic devices, I was trying to follow as much of the Pro Tour that I possibly could. Got to check out one shop when I was up there too, which was actually pretty cool. Nobody really playing at that point, but the shop looked like it had a pretty good vibe.
Well, we'll try and make that up because I'm sure Matt had plenty on his plate. Matt, what Magic did you play?
I did have plenty on my plate. I got a couple of leagues knocked out. I was lucky enough to stream Wednesday. I was hoping to upload it to YouTube, and I finally figured out I was getting no audio, and I finally figured out what the issue is. So I promise this next week when I stream, or this week when I stream, we'll get this uploaded to YouTube, and I'll record one of my streams. Got to play through some matches with the Bug Midrange. Been hammering out kind of a standard deck with Grixis Control. The mana's awful, and so I need to balance that. The one thing I want to talk about is probably, and this goes out to Mike, who helped me design this bug deck. All right, I'm not gonna lie. He actually designed it, and I made some minor changes. I had the play of what I think might have been the year. Had a Noble Hierarch out. Had a Lazav out. My opponent's turn. He was on Grixis Death Shadow. I think he was at 10. He had a fetch and a Death Shadow out. And I copied the Noble Hierarch at the end of the turn. So my Lazav was a Noble Hierarch. Thought seized him, saw that he had a couple of spells, no counter spells. Went for the attack, maintained priority with the Noble Hierarch on the stack. Copied my Scavenging Ooze in my graveyard. Ate one of his things to put a counter onto my Lazav. Maintained priority. And then copied my own Goyf that was a 5, or that was a 6-7. And so I had I ate two things, and I ended up having a 10-11 Goyf when I attacked in after he had not blocked, which was lethal. He didn't block because he thought he was safe, and the play of the week, probably the century, I'll never see that happen again. But no, I got to play a lot of Bug, got to play some Grixis, and I'm hoping to play in a PPTQ this weekend with standard Grixis to see how that goes as well. I only have a couple of weeks until the Invitational.
Yeah, coming up the first week of December, we'll have the Matt Goes to the Invitational podcast here on Tryhards when he gets kind of down deep into what he's playing. And Brian, I've got even more faith in him now than I did before because he made the play of the week, the play of the year, and the play of the century all at the same time, according to his own story. So
according to the top five moments on Magic, I did not see that pop up on my stream there, Matt.
I wish I would have recorded it.
You should get in touch with Riley Knight and see if you can kind of, you know, recreate this.
Hopefully you'll get to make it again on a little bit bigger stage, and we'll all get to watch you do it. All right, maybe you won't be handing your opponent a token in order to get them to make the play you want them to make, but maybe you'll
we'll
be
talk
able
about that
to.
Later.
Maybe you'll be able to make that play again. It's time for our Patreon drawing this week. We've gotten things worked out. We now know how to play by the new rules of Patreon, and with this in place, as we announced last week, we have another pack of GP lands to give away. We picked up these land packs at GP Minneapolis over the summer, and we've been giving them out as we can because people seem to love them. And we have 56 entrants now. Matt, you have our eligibles in front of you. I have the Tryhards randomizer. We're going to hit it here. Beep, boop, beep. 46. 46.
This is a Twitter entry. Agent MLP412. So I will reach out to them, and congratulations on the random Twitter person, but thank you for listening, and thank you for responding to the Twitter comment. We'll get that out to you as soon as you respond to our DM.
All right, Agent, congratulations. You'll pick up the land pack from us here at Tryhards. Well, the other thing that we give out, although usually it only goes to one of the cast members of the show, is a crown. A crown of glory. After a Pro Tour Pick'em episode. Too long have I lain in the weeds, in the shadows, and I was able to come back around this time and pick up, well, half as many crowns as the leader has now. Matt, still the champ with 4 overall wins. Brian, who sprinted out of the gate like the proverbial rabbit, has been stuck on 3 for a while now, and I was able to get my 2nd over the weekend. Brian went with Shahar Shenhar, Mr. Beckstrom, and Lucas Esper Bertho. That was a total of 554. You get the points based on where your players finish. Low score, best, just as in golf. Matt with Huey Jensen, the outsider, Martin Yuza, and Mr. Brian Gottlieb, the ultimate outsider, because he didn't play in the Pro Tour.
So he didn't play.
I took my lickings on Twitter a little bit. I expect more from you guys as far as I need to be ridiculed about this.
He's a better author than he is a PT player.
This is true. Saw him on the list for the Pro Tour invites. I don't know why I would trust anything that Wizards puts up. And I had heard him on the cast talking about preparing for the Pro Tour. I realized he was helping Jerry to prepare for the Pro Tour. We already had a patron call me out. I deserve everything I get, so please shovel it on me.
With the 1,000-point penalty for picking somebody who didn't
play in the Pro
Tour. I feel
like it should be a 2,000-point penalty.
Matt's final score was 1,705, new worst score in the history of Tryhard's Pick'em. And that's an auspicious pick'em to have the new worst score on, because with my final total, 83. Yes, 83, the second lowest total in Tryhard's Pick'em history. The record was set by none other than Brian in the very first ever Tryhard's Pick'em for a Pro Tour Eldritch Moon. We don't even remember that Pro Tour. It was so long ago. Brian had Mike Segrist, Steve Rubin, and LSV. For this one, I had Shota Yasuoka. We did it. If you remember last week's cast, I knew I was taking a chance on this one. Shota, we did it. Now I can just ride off into the sunset. Brad Nelson and Reed Duke, they finished 26th, 28th, and 29th, respectively. Let me just get out my speech here that I want to... Oh, no, I'm just kidding. It was fun to pick over the weekend, and I wish I would have been able to watch a little bit more of it. I didn't even know that things were going that well until, like, late Saturday night, and then when I woke up Sunday, I couldn't even remember checking it out. So it was fun to find out twice again later.
I checked very briefly on Saturday. Thought I was in okay position, thinking, oh, the 200s are good. It's when you find those 300s and, you know, the high three, the low 400s or, you know, whatever. I was like, oh, I might be in an okay spot. And then I saw where Sean's trio was, and I'm thinking, there's no way we're coming back from this. So, no, congrats, Sean. You deserve it. That was second best in Tryhard's history. So there you go.
Yeah, I do have to give a shout out on this. Brian, both myself and you, obviously me, we were beat by one of our listeners, Brian Drayling. He actually had 521 points, so he just barely beat you, and he definitely beat me.
Drayling, that's awesome. Who did he have? I didn't see that.
Jerry T, Seth Mayenfield, and Edgar Magales.
Magales.
Mm-hmm. Magales, that's right.
Yeah, he's really good. Those are good, hey.
Those are good picks, and he actually put a theory of ours to the test by taking one of the participants in the Player of the Year showdown. Now, we all stayed away from it because we weren't sure if they were going to end up sharp or if they were going to end up worn out after the showdown between Luis Salvato and Seth Manfield. Guys, this was fantastic on Thursday. I did get to watch this. They went with a different format. It was the best of seven, bring four decks, play only game ones in the run-up, and once your deck won, you had to retire it. So to win it, you would have to win with all four decks that you brought. In game one, Seth Manfield on Mono Blue Aggro, and it was Salvato also on Mono Blue Aggro. Manfield was able to get there with the win. Game two, Salvato stays with Mono Blue Aggro, gets the win over the Mono Red Wizard Aggro deck, the one I was talking about earlier, Mono Red, Experimental Frenzy, so forth. And now Salvato gets on a roll. He grabs the Jeskai control list, gets a win over Boros Weenie, and then in game four with his own Mono Red Wizard aggro deck, knocks off the Is It Drake deck. Manfield did come back with Boros Weenie in game five, but wrapping up Player of the Year with White Weenie. And what a prelude that was to the top eight, watching Luis Salvato take it down with White Weenie. He is your Player of the Year. That was a very cool showdown that Wizards came up with that Thursday afternoon. Am I going to be in favor of that as a format going forward for all time if we have this? I'm not sure I want to go that far now, but I know this one with these two players was very compelling to watch. And it was just the beginning of this Pro Tour weekend. Matt, there were so many fireworks that many people forgot about the preview that we were given by Salvato on Thursday by the time we got to the end of the tournament on Sunday.
Player of the Year show-off was amazing. I think it equally played to and franchise players, and it played to kind of newer players saying, oh, what's this that everyone's talking to? We had 510 players, one of the better Pro Tours I've seen. We had 143 players day two. LSV and Andrew Ellenbogen played off in the finals, and unfortunately, it was kind of an anticlimactic couple of games. Andrew ended up taking it down to be our Pro Tour Guild of Ravnica winner. we had a pretty stacked top eight. We had Wilson Mock, Andrew, obviously, Yu Watanabe, Tai Jun Hao, Casper Nielsen, Jeremy Dezani, Michael Burnett, and LSV. The way that LSV won in the semis was pretty hysterical. Brian, did you hear about this token nonsense that he pulled off?
Yeah, I actually, that was part of the stuff that I was watching a little bit on Sunday. So I actually watched that semifinal where he was reaching for the token to kind of help him out on kind of figuring out blocks and things. And Reed Duke made the comment as he was doing this, was like, oh man, that's basically like showing that you're going to bluff. He actually said that in so many words. And it turns out he was, because LSV just slams the settle the wreckage. And Dezani just instantaneously extends his hand because he knows he's dead on the crackback.
So even Gabby, after the fact, said, and his teammates, why did he fall for that? We all know he's full of
yeah.
Everyone's like, we would have known a bluff. It was an amazing play. Grats to LSV for taking second, and grats to Andrew as well. What did you see during this? I want to go through these that were 27 through 30 points, but did you notice anything outside of those decks that were that was really interesting on the weekend?
I think for me, what stood out was what we didn't see, and that was control, really anywhere in the room doing well in the upper echelon of the tournament. Mono White Weenie essentially was everywhere. I didn't really see it struggle with anything too much. I think the Is It Drake deck, the combo deck that's heavy with the Phoenix, could be a usurper just because of the volume of damage that it can output when you get to turn three, turn four, and how quickly it blows through its deck. It's mostly air, and I want to talk about the potential to kind of abuse that coming up. This is a metagame that I think is ripe to be angle shot by a more controlling deck that's willing to take a step, take some early damage, and then regroup in some way, because there was no Teferi anywhere to be seen. The only settles were in the sort of mid-rangey mirror. So I think it was control conspicuous by its absence, as well as an archetype that is a favorite when you play online, and that's the Golgari archetype. That was really nowhere of importance on Sunday.
All these players basically got there. They were X and three decks for the most part, and on the standard side, they basically got there in the back of their limited strengths. We had in our 30-point deck list, Mono Blue Tempo, which is the Mono Blue, you know, just commons, basically. Red White Aggro and Is It Drakes, two copies of Is It Drakes. Then in a 25-point position, we had Zach Allen with Jeskai Control. There's your really the only control deck that was up in there. And a couple of Mono Red Aggros. There was another, actually, I take that back. There was another Jeskai Control in that same. And then some Is It Drakes. Couple of token decks and a single Golgari mid or two Golgari mid range. That's your basic four decks. Depending on how you look at it, it's four or five decks. But yeah, I think Sean, I think you're right. I mean, it's just the control converted well, but it looks like they didn't convert on the limited portion of it all that great. One card that I saw going through here that was just standing out to me, A, Crackling Drake, and B, the kind of the counter to a lot of these decks, which was the Deafening Clarion. Without Deafening Clarion, these Crackling Drake decks would not be around. It would not have the lasting power against these aggro decks.
I want to correct the record, if I may. There was one Jeskai Control list in the top eight, gentlemen, Wilson Mock. But it's not a standard control list because he's running four Teferi, but three Crackling Drakes, along with the four Deafening Clarion, the two Cleansing Novas, and a Search for Iskander, which I thought was a really, really good choice, just having one in the deck there to maybe smooth out some draws. But what I really like about this is really understands the power of Teferi about getting ahead and about establishing the board control, and obviously with the win condition there. But at the same time, the Crackling Drake gives it this kind of aggro idea and this awesome threat on the other side of the board, not to mention that that thing cantrips when it comes into play. Paired with Deafening Clarion on the second mode, you can gain lifelink and just have an absolutely ginormous Drake, you know, swinging in on the other side. I think that just buys you that much more time. So kind of pairing this Is It Drake idea with a control matchup, I really like that build from Wilson Mock. The other stuff, I was very surprised to see Golgari not being as represented as it was. The Boros aggro deck, I think, just kind of had its cotillion, its coming out party, its quinceañera, as it were. there was just nothing stopping this thing. It was, it's so redundant. It can hit you from so many different angles. And I think we just realized that Arclight Phoenix, if anybody bought into those right when Guilds was released, they're making a pretty penny right now, because that card is absolutely bonkers. And the more I see it in both Standard and Modern, it is going to be sticking around for quite a long time.
Yeah, it was the Crackling Drake that got the most wide-eyed reaction from some people that were texting me that don't play Magic all that often, but did play once upon a time. Hidden best mode on Crackling Drake, dead ass, 4. That is a key number, especially when you've got Clarion in your own deck, because it allows you, as Brian said, to take advantage of both sides of Clarion while you're staying aggressive. It also encourages your opponent to play more fodder into your Clarion to be swept up. Fodder, that was the other key word for me. If you look at all these decks and what they have in common, then I'm going to set decks that play Crackling Drake aside for just a moment. The winning decks, the white base decks. Then you have the Golgari decks. Then you have anything that's playing Experiment. What do all these decks have in common? Their individual cards don't mean anything. There's no one individual card that is worth singling out in any valuable edge-bringing way. They're just actually spamming the board with things that it feels bad to target with removal. I mean, these decks are literally purposefully playing cards that you feel bad about having to take off the board. And so when you play in these kind of metagames, they are obviating powerful removal like Vraska's Contempt, like Eldest Reborn. So we have to get used to a metagame where it's not singular threats, it's the spamming of onto the board that you have to deal with in some way and be ready for an environment in which there's nothing to feel good about targeting that your opponent brings to the game. It's just this congealing of fat and gravy and just all this junk that by itself doesn't do anything, but they're able to put enough of it out there that it just kind of seeps through and kind of gets you. And it's a different mentality to think about taking your opponent's strategy apart when no one individual card really means anything. But what they want to do is spam a whole bunch of cards each turn to the board. I think Damping Sphere's time has come. That's the card that I put in all the sideboards of all my decks just this afternoon. When you have decks that want to play a whole bunch of stuff in one turn but don't care what it is, that is the closest thing we have to the three ball in Standard right now, and those decks won't be able to keep up. Damping Sphere, I think, could be the card that changes the metagame.
These decks going 2 spells, 3 spells a turn is pretty common, but I think they could be slowed down and just win depending on what you do. But maybe Damping Sphere is too slow. This Pro Tour was head games upon head games because we had teams that were playing Rust Ring Falcon to counter opponents' Healer's Hawks because they knew Healer Hawks were, you know, just kind of the netter butters. Odonto Vanguard's an uncommon. The question of the weekend was, how do we answer Odonto Vanguard? The other funny thing, I shouldn't say funny, but this shows you, hey, Pro Tour players are human no matter how long they've been playing. There was a player who's been playing for years, had many Pro Tour invites, and was playing Aurelia in his red-white aggro deck. I don't know his name. But the entire weekend, he did not trigger Mentor because he did not know that Aurelia had Mentor on it. This just shows you the high level of play and obviously how good Aurelia is without Mentor. But the high level of play and, hey, everyone makes mistakes. Great Pro Tour, great Standard format so far from what I've seen. Just fantastic Standard format. And I hope it continues on like this for the rest of New Ravnica block.
Yeah, everyone has been raving about this Standard and hopefully it keeps up into as long as Wizards can see down the horizon into the future. From one great tournament this weekend at the Pro Tour to another coming up, the guys at Leaving a Legacy, all of the Legacy lovers really get together whenever we can. They're doing their Legacy Open this weekend. Good luck to Pat and Jerry and their crew as they put that together. Should be a lot of fun, and I know Legacy lovers on the East Coast are going to have a lot of fun with that. That brings us up to the news this week. WotC is trying to meta the news. They have made an announcement that there's going to be an announcement coming up on December 6th at the Game Awards. Sure. Okay. They did tell us that it was going to concern the future of competitive Magic gaming. Do you guys have any guesses on what this might be? Brian, I'll let you throw the first dart.
Yeah, I've read some things about this. I've heard some rumblings about a possible new format, and that is very, very intriguing to me. Someone has maybe posited that Wizards is trying to angle for a new Eternal format that is not quite modern, but it's something that's going postmodern. It's going to be something that is already plugged into Arena, so it's going to have to include the Kaladesh block. I think it might be a little bit too early to see if that's actually something that's going to catch on, because as we've seen all the talk about these new formats, you know, Brawl is going to be the new big thing. All of this stuff just kind of has its flash in the pan and then it kind of dies off. So is Wizards going to get behind something? The other thing might be, are they going to do something with the reserve list? No, I think I can put that to bed right now. Wizards has been very, very adamant. We've seen nothing from the bigwigs at Wizards other than consistency with the reserve list. I don't think there's going to be anything with that. I'm kind of leaning toward maybe new format. I'm kind of leaning toward a different product, perhaps. They love to crank out their different kinds of products. Hurley, what about you? Have you heard anything on Twitterverse lately that would lead you to think that it's something bigger than what I've already brought up?
I think you're probably nailing the hitting the nail on the head. I do think it's going to be some sort of unique format for Arena. You know, I hope it doesn't die off kind of like Brawl did. I mean, I think Brawl was just badly planned, and why would you not have Brawl on Arena? That was the big question I always had. It did also say for organized play. So I think they're probably also going to announce the regional pro tours and the regional RPTQs, like the new qualification system is. So I think they're going to go in depth on that. It wouldn't surprise me if they announced that they're going to start holding, they pick one or two cities in each region, and that's where they're going to hold their pro tours every single time. So it might be like, you know, Seattle, since they have a soundstage there, and just fly everyone out to Seattle. I don't know, but I think the big one's going to be some type of new format to play that is Arena compatible and Arena economy fixes as well.
Yeah, I was with you, Matt. My knee-jerk reaction to this was Arena gets a path to the PT. And then I remembered Arena's still in open beta, technically. So I think that if that's going to be the case, they're going to hold off on that until it's officially released, officially, and that we're not going to see that while it's still in open beta. I think this is going to be the announcement of whatever Wizards is going to call Frontier. It's going to be the new, quote-unquote, Eternal format so that you don't have to go get those old card, you know, the breaking point from when they changed the card frame so everybody would know what's modern and what's not. And now we're going to be confused because there's going to be the new format.
Yeah, we'll be so confused.
That'll be that's what my guess is. This is the new Wizards favorite son, Eternal format. We'll see when that announcement comes up on December 6th. Well, there was a sad announcement today, one that was so official that it was in Maru's Making Magic article. Brian, I'm sorry. You might want to reach across your desk and get the Kleenexes out right now. This week, in his Making Magic article, Maru delved into how likely we are to return to certain planes for future Magic releases. Your favorite, one of my favorites, Lorwyn, is, according to Maru, viewed as both unpopular and difficult to work with. Oh. Sorry, buddy. Doesn't look like we're ever going back to the land of fairies and Kithkin.
What?
Yeah,
difficult to work with. I do not understand that. That was the first set we had planeswalkers. I mean, if people would realize the history of the Lorwyn block, that's kind of the set that really Magic owes a lot of its history and its popularity to the Lorwyn block. Would you not agree? The Renaissance, as it were, came with that. And some of our favorite writers nowadays, I think, probably started playing right around Lorwyn block and kind of say that's the set that they really got into it. This was back in what, 2006?
2006, 2007 in there. To kind of put it in a nutshell, and I'll link his article in the show notes. Basically, he said it was so dense that they tried to do so many things that it wasn't, quote, easily accessible. But at the same time, it was actually felt to be soft by some of the more enfranchised players, and that he didn't think, and this he being Maru, he didn't think they executed on the tribal theme very well. I thought All I remember is Kithkin and fairies. So you must have executed on it pretty well.
Overrun by Kithkin.
Oh, yeah. Because
anybody who's seen Kinsbale Cavalier coming at you from the other side of the table in Knight of the Meadowgrain, they have a much different experience than that, that's for sure.
Although Maru did admit Lorwyn may have the coolest hook for a plane ever, and that is a plane that oscillates between light and dark. Lorwyn and Shadowmoor just on a regular basis. That is one of the coolest ideas for a plane of existence.
Get your Equinoxes out from Legends, everybody, and take a look at it. You got the Lorwyn right there in the card art.
If you're interested in that, Maru said he's going to do part two and finish that series out. He invented another scale, kind of like the storm scale, to determine how likely or unlikely we are to go to the plane. Is it Rabia? The plane that hosted Arabian Nights is the storm scale of planes we'll go back to. Essentially, we're never going back to Arabian Nights. So you get your rating on that scale. All right, Brian's going to finish with his tissues. While we walk across the floor, he'll look for a trash can next to the elevator. Matt, what's getting a ride with you in this week's Financial Elevator?
The card this week in the elevator is going to be Golden Demise. This is an uncommon as well. These are like 20 cents, something like that. But moving forward, depending on what we get, remember, we still have Rakdos to get as well in the guilds. I think Golden Demise value is going to go way, way up. I mean, this could be another 75 cent to a dollar Danto Vanguard style card. Pick up your Golden Demises at, you know, whatever they are, 10 cents, 20 cents right now, before they shoot up later in the block.
I'm ready to ascend after this week's ride in the elevator. That brings us up to this week's 3 minutes to brew. No, it's not conjecture. We're really going to do this. Brian, what do you have for us this week?
That's right, Sean. We are tackling just that this week, the Merari conjecture. This is a saga from Dominaria. One blue, four other. Saga 1, return target instant card from your graveyard to your hand. Saga 2, return target sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. And at the third saga, until end of turn, whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, copy it. You may choose new targets for the copy. Gentlemen, this card saw some play in certain, is it Phoenix decks? It's been seeing some play in a lot of different decks over the course of the Pro Tour. And I think just as a one-off, it is a 5 casting cost, by the way. So I'm curious to see what you would do with this if you were brewing around the Merari conjecture. Does this have the power level as a History of Benalia? Or is this something that might be relegated to a supporting role? Sean, I'm going to start with you on this beautiful enchantment.
The first thing that pops up to me is a way to get extra uses out of my Nexus of Fate. So Bant Nexus is the sort of natural first thought for me. But when you combine the ability of the Merari conjecture to sort of double up, now I don't want to just kind of hold the game at arm's length. I want to find a way to win. And the card that I want to keep recurring with this is March of the Multitudes. If I can make that work in a Bant shell, we're going late, obviously, and the ability to use Merari Conjecture to rebuy Cleansing Nova and other things that are going to help me get to the late game is also appealing. But the card that I want to pair with this right out of the gate, March of the Multitudes, I think if you can go late with Bant, now you suddenly have other ways to win the game than just tucking your own Teferi.
I actually played this in a deck in Aliantrazi's Lich deck. This card is a lot of fun. There's a couple of things to remember about this card. A, even though they feel like they should be, the sagas aren't all legendary. In a control style deck, I mean, I've been looking at adding this into my Grixis Standard deck just to kind of get that additional value. But you also have to have a good mix of sorceries in there. So probably sorcery card draw, things like that. And a way to loop or cheat cards once it hits 3 there. This card is super powerful, and I don't think people should be sleeping on this. This has been very, very close multiple times to my pick of the week.
The thing that really stands out to me about this is if Standard has shown us anything, and this is, I think, what the big, huge success with R&D with Guilds of Ravnica is redundancy. And the redundancy in Guilds of Ravnica and the way that players are building decks right now, it's coming at you from so many different angles. And this just fits into that. Looking at the battlefield and you're thinking, oh, my opponent has nothing. And they cast some red spells and suddenly there's some Arc Light Phoenixes that are staring you square in the face and then turn sideways to attack in for 6 or 9. That's pretty terrifying. And I think that's part of the fun of this, is figuring out kind of that puzzle. And that's what this card does. Mirari Conjecture really makes you look at all the different axes that this can do. And with all of the powerful cards that we have, I think in the Izzet colors especially, that's what you want to do with this card. A multiple card like Explosion to deal X damage to any target, and then you draw X cards. If you can copy Risk Factor with this card, that seems like you're coming at it from a very, very good spot. And I think we've realized that the mana base is right there for Jeskai, or is it too, for that to happen. I think this is a card that's going to be picking up some steam here in the next few months, especially in response to all of the Boros aggro running around.
The Mirari Conjecture, this week's 3 minutes to brew here on TryHard. That brings us up to what we did to get better this week. I'm going to reiterate what I talked about earlier. Watching the World Chess Championships, it had me just thinking about the game a little bit more strategically as I played. And by the way, you want to hear everything that I know about chess? Don't get bossed around when you're on the black pieces. Okay, that's it. That's the sum total of what I've learned about chess and watching those four games. Match 5 coming up tomorrow, and I'm actually looking forward to watching it. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Here's some names I want to throw out to you guys. Gabriel Nassif, Patrick Chapin, Kevin Jones, Josh Utter Layton, Luis Salvato, and Martin Yuza.
Oh, I had it until you said Luis Salvato. They were all tall, gaunt men.
Well, they are all tall, gaunt men until Luis Salvato. This is very true. But gentlemen, there's a number associated with this that I want you to think about. All of those names that I just mentioned are very, very good Magic players. And the number I'm throwing out there is 378. None of those players finished above 378 at the Magic Pro Tour for Guilds of Ravnica. I think it's always good to look in the mirror and kind of be like, you know what? You might not think you're great at this game, but even these people, even Gabriel Nassif at 493rd out of 510 players has bad tournaments. And it's always good to keep that in perspective, even as a Friday Night Magic at that PPTQ that you were planning for and thought it was going to be the greatest thing and you had all the hot tech. It's okay. Even the good players in the world have bad weekends, and they've planned a lot more than you have.
Matt, what'd you do to get better?
I got to play some paper with the deck. I'm hopefully going to knock out a PPTQ this weekend, but I got to play some more with some more modern. My plan is to just kind of take a break. I've been grinding myself so hard on Magic lately that I'm not necessarily burnt out, but I think the best thing I did was decide Friday night to just kind of like relax and play. The deck started to flow for me, if that makes sense. I'm not pulling where I want to be as far as records and stuff, but somebody made the comment. They're like, you know, just play a fun deck tonight or play something else. And I'm like, you know what? Screw it. I don't care what this deck does. I'm like, I'll just play, just BS with some of my friends. And I found the deck was just flowing better. And I think I realized that I've been so kind of stressed out planning that I need to take a step back. And I plan on doing that. And hopefully it'll lead to a better tournament result.
While Matt relaxes it out, we're going to take a break for the next week. Oh, you brave soul. Try not to get any of Matt on you. That's been this week's episode of Tryhards. We'll see you here next week.